Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today is Friday. It's Friday, August 30th. We are entering the fall season here for youth soccer in the United States, generally speaking. And so we're going to have a soccer-specific chat from a practitioner's point of view. Benny Rogers, a multi-year coaching practitioner himself, who had previously played much of his youth soccer with Coach Brian Kleiben, is on the line, and we're going to be dissecting a lot of the coaching philosophy behind 3-4-3. Behind, you know, how I view the game, how he views the game, how Brian Kleiben views the game and executed some of the unprecedented work that he's done here in the United States. There's a number of takeaways from the episode, quite a bit of practical implementation stuff, and some very good chats regarding, you know, the importance of having a structured methodology instead of just picking activities here and there kind of off the whim and not really having a holistic approach with a vision in mind, with an end product in mind. We talk about balancing the pressure to win versus, you know, the traditional thing here of winning versus development. So that gets thrown into the mix of our chat. Setting expectations is a huge one, and building trust, you know, with the players, with the families, huge, huge, huge for you to be able to work your magic in peace, and so many other things. But as always, of course, you can go to 343coaching.com to pick up either the free course or the premium course that exists there. You should do that now, though, right? It's the beginning of the fall season, and it's always best to get that up and running when you're getting started, when the players are reconvening, when everybody's getting together before the first games kick off. Of course, you can implement it at any point throughout the year, no question about it. But it's best to get started when, well, when the season is about to get started. So here we go. Without further ado, let's jump straight into the episode on coaching specific things. Here we go. So Benny, for everybody listening, we wanted to record a few episodes here about soccer, soccer specific stuff, training, coaching, whatever it is that is kind of like field-ish related. We wanted to do that because we know that everybody's fall season is getting started, and maybe that's the best way that we can be helpful at this point. Obviously, not to mention that we want to also make aware everybody the program, aside from, I mean, it's not going to be an ad. Obviously, we want to teach and give practical advice here, but they need to be made aware of that because, in my opinion, now is the best time to get started with a clean slate, right, Benny? You're coming in, the players are coming in, you know, you guys are reconvening. And it's better to do it now than starting a whole new way of coaching midway through a season. So with that, I'll hand the keys over to you. As I said, one of the experiments that we're doing here is I have not prepared in any way, shape, or form for what you're going to talk about.
Why don't we start with one of the intro lessons on the philosophy, and it's titled The Huge Mistake That Well-Meaning Coaches Are Making. I think it's a good place to start. Because especially if you don't have access to the 3-4-3 methodology, you're probably picking and choosing random little exercises that maybe you see on Twitter, maybe on Instagram, maybe it's exercises that you remember that your coach did, right? And so, and by doing this, there's no continuity that exists within your training. And so the players have a hard time understanding the concepts or grasping what it is you're trying to do. So what is the benefit of having this structural foundation of this 3-4-3 methodology for coaches and players alike?
I think you described it pretty well there. For coaches, if I speak to coaches specifically, if you have an established framework, an established way of doing things with an established set of activities, you get the opportunity to become very good at those activities, become very good at communicating those activities, and become very good at delivering an entire methodology or an entire framework or an entire identity, an entire style of play to your players and to your team. So it brings unity to everything versus what you already said. If you don't have something like that, then you're picking and choosing things at random and stitching them together. And you're in experimentation phase. You're tinkering. You're still, in my opinion, with all respect, you're still kind of new at this coaching thing. Because after a certain number of years, whether that's 2, 3, 5, or 20, naturally you converge to your own sort of framework or your own sort of methodology, your own sort of way of doing things. Now the question is,
is that convergence that you came to a good one? Or is it a crappy one? Or is it somewhere in the middle? Okay, but everybody converges to their own thing. And so what we try to do is get you started on one that obviously has worked extremely well for us, and we believe wholeheartedly would work extremely well for everybody else who really is serious and sticks to it. And why we think it's good is because we have an unprecedented amount of evidence, Benny. And I won't go into all of the evidence. Maybe you want to extract some of those pieces of evidence from us. But first and foremost, for those of you who have not been with us for a very long time, you can go on YouTube, for instance, and see extensive video evidence of our teams actually playing and actually executing what it is that we advocate for, and actually executing it at an extremely high level that has rarely, if ever, been seen before in the country. And so when you have this extensive library at your disposal to show, then you can say, not that you have proof, because proof, I reserve that word for things like mathematics, right? Or physics, really rigorous scientific sorts of things. But you have an ocean of evidence that you can say, okay, it looks like this way of training works. And that's what we're trying to get everybody on board with, versus tinkering and experimenting and perhaps converging on something that's not great.
So allow me, Gary, to play devil's advocate a little bit. Some parents, maybe that might not be educated, maybe even some coaches, especially when they're working with the younger age groups, right? We're saying to establish your 12 core exercises or whatever it may be, right? How can you keep the players engaged, especially at the younger ages? Players need a lot of variety. And so if they're doing the same thing over and over again, they may get bored, or they may not even want to show up anymore. So one, I think it's, how can you educate the parents to let them know what it is that you're doing? And two, how can you change it up a little bit within your 12 core exercises? How can you make it fresh and exciting for them so that they want to keep coming and learning and growing?
Yeah, it's the million-dollar question, isn't it, Benny? Because one thing is having the activities and the methodology in theory that you say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And the second piece of the puzzle, perhaps more important even, is can you as an artist execute it? And part of being the artist that can execute at a high level is those two things that you just said. Number one, if you're in the youth game, educating the parents, because the parents are coming at it from a whole other perspective. And they might think, or it's natural to think, oh, if we do the same thing over and over again, how is my kid learning new things? And that's number one, which is logical. Number two is now you're exposed to a flood of information or misinformation or disinformation online regarding good coaching. And you're reading all of these things online. And you as a parent, obviously you're not a practitioner. It's easy for you to absorb and believe some of the stuff that's out there, and inadvertently, perhaps not doing what's best for your son or daughter. Okay, so parent education is an enormous challenge, very difficult. My suggestion would obviously be constant communication with them. First and foremost, setting the expectations out at the very beginning of the season is crucial so that they're not left guessing as to what it is that you're doing. And part of that expectations is telling them the methodology also. Say, hey, listen, we ultimately want to develop your kid to have these types of skills, which are the core fundamental skills that apply to everything under the sun. And these are the sorts of exercises that work on all of those skills. So we're going to be repeating these exercises over and over and over again, because guess what, guys? Repetition leads to mastery. Repetition leads to skill. If you are trying a whole bunch of different things all the time, then you're basically not getting good at anything. You're averaging everything out. So if one day you're trying to juggle a certain way, the other day you're having them doing like step overs, the other day you're having them dribble and turn around with the inside of the foot, the other way you're having them dribble and turn with the outside of the foot. There's thousands of activities, right, Benny? And if you're mixing it all up, then you're never getting good at anything. It's an averaging process. And we want you to get good at the core fundamental skills that extrapolate to all of the other skills. And that's what these exercises do. And that's what we're going to be doing throughout the entire season so that they can get good. Then we layer on some complexity later on, season two, year two, whatever. So that's the parent education side. And by the way, you can't just do it before the season starts. This is a weekly process and weekly engagements with the parents, deliberate or not, you know, just in passing by on the week or whatever. Now, insofar as the kids are concerned, obviously it depends what age they're at in many ways, insofar as what you can tell them and they'll really assimilate. But number one, you have to educate them also, kind of tell them the same things that I just finished saying, but in a kid sort of way. And then number two, keeping it fresh. Well, I think a lot of that comes from the charisma of the coach. If you are a boring ass coach who doesn't inspire, then yeah, the kids are going to get bored doing the same rondo every single day. But if you are charismatic, if you have the energy, if they can sense it authentically that you're into it yourself, then they're going to be into it themselves. Insofar as varying the activity, changing it up or something like that, look, you guys can maybe tweak a thing or two here or there, but try not to tweak anything. It's all about charisma and intensity and passion and making it a game for them, making it competitive for them.
Two things, Gary, I want to bring up. One is, and I think it's so important what you said, right? It's educating the parents early. I know I've made the mistake in my coaching career, in my early years as a coach of, you know, before the season started, right? I'd have a parent meeting, but it wouldn't be about, hey, this is going to be the philosophy of the team. This is how I'm going to train the kids. These are the activities I'm going to do, right? And so as the season goes on, you have parents email you or calling you, hey, Coach Benny, you've been doing the same 4v1 rondo for the past 3 months. And, you know, is my kid going to learn anything else? And so if the parents aren't educated, then, you know, you're going to deal with those issues. The other thing too, Gary, that you mentioned about like the charisma of the coach. For me personally, again, I've been implementing the 3-4-3 methodology. Every session, right, we start with rondos. And for me and my kids, right, I tell them like, all right, gentlemen, we're starting 4v1 rondos today. And they're all, let's go. You know, they get excited because I've instilled it in them like, hey, you're going to compete. This is going to make you better. So I think you're 100% right, Gary. I think it has to come from the coach to be charismatic, to be energized, right? Because again, if you have a coach that's low energy, going through the motions, it rubs off on the players. So it's the same exact thing. Moving on, Gary. So with club soccer now, there's a lot of pressure from the parents to win, from club directors to win. How do you manage the expectations of the parents and the players who might prioritize immediate results? All the parents are chasing, oh, we want to win Surf Cup this weekend. You know, I feel like a lot of the time they're not looking at the long-term development. They're so focused on this one weekend or this one game. Coach, we need to win this tournament, this game. So how can you manage the expectations of the parents and the players for that matter?
Yeah, from a winning perspective, it's also a tricky one. So very good question. And we all are exposed to that. Number one thing that comes to mind is winning does matter. It does. It does matter. And in my opinion, if you have a coach or a club or something that has a philosophy that basically has as a central theme, winning doesn't matter, then I would run away. I would run away. Because part of all of this is, I mean, it's a game. You want to win. Just like a game of cards, just like a board game, just like anything, you want to win, of course. So now it's a matter of how do you communicate to the parents realistic expectations for the particular team that you have? And two, also communicating that the way that you have a higher probability of winning and winning consistently is if the team and the players coalesce to this one methodology and this one way of playing, this one identity, because the sum of the parts is not as great as the whole. Does that make sense, right? So if you have 11 players and you get them all aligned and on the same page, you have a higher probability of winning. That's what a true identity, true methodology does for you. In our opinion, in international football's opinion also, if you have a possession-based way of playing where you really treasure the ball and you know that that matters a hell of a lot, then the probability of winning goes up, okay? That's on the winning front. And then if you look at it from a player development front, you are developing your players if you have a possession-based philosophy, because guess what? You're going to have more of the ball when you play possession soccer, right? Your kid is going to have more touches on the ball. Your kid is going to be exposed to having the opportunity of having more decisions on the ball because they have the ball more often than not. If you're just kicking back and forth, jungle ball all over the place with no control whatsoever. First off, that's not football. Okay. That's kind of like a kickball sort of thing. The players are not getting that many touches. The players are not getting exposed to high level decision making in any respect. And the probability of you winning goes down if you play that way. Now, some might think, oh, well, Gary, the winningest team in our league or in our competition or whatever plays kickball. Okay, sure. But guess what? Maybe because they have the man child or two man child up top or something, or two or three really special guys. And at that level, at that age, yeah, they take over and dribble by your whole team and score, or just outrun them and score. So of course they're going to win. But this is the key thing. If that particular team that plays that way were to play the possession-based way, it would be even more of a massacre. So these are all the discussions that need to be had with the parents. We want to win, sure. Listen, let's be realistic. We're not at the very top. We're not also not at the very bottom. We're going to try to, you know, win more than we should be winning. And I'm always going to try to have us win, but always within this framework and not sacrificing the development of the team and the individual players for that one win. Maybe we'll do it once in a while. Maybe we'll say, oh, you know what? We're playing against this team that we know we won't be able to establish our identity. I'm going to take this opportunity to teach the kids how to park the bus and launch counterattacks. And that'll give us a better chance of winning. And the kids get exposed to a little something different also. But that only happens when I'm confronted with an opponent that I know we have almost zero chance of winning, and we're not going to, and almost zero chance of imposing our style of play. I don't know. You just have to communicate all these things, Ben.
Also agree. Some people say that this possession-based structure framework, it hinders the player's individual growth in terms of creativity. Meaning, right, if I'm a winger and I'm okay, yeah, I know my role is when I get the ball. One is to keep possession. Some people may say wingers at young age, as soon as they get the ball, they want them driving at the defenders every single time. How does this 3-4-3 methodology, how does it help the individual player in terms of their creativity, in terms of decision-making? Does it help or does it hinder?
Well, the short answer, it helps, obviously. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. But the short answer here, and then I'll give you a longer winded answer, is first off, we have to understand what it is that we mean by creativity, okay? Because I think people have a misconception of what that is and then how it comes about. Letting the players do whatever the hell they want on the field does not magically give you creativity, okay? It makes you a stupider player by doing that. If you give them a good structure where it's more controlled than just randomness on the field and everybody doing whatever it is that they want, then it liberates each individual player, one, to make more decisions. Okay. You channel their focus a little bit more. You say, hey, if you're an outside back, you know, here are the multitude of options that you have on the table, whether it's dribbling and going forward and attacking, whether it's passing it to your center back, whether you're giving it to your center mid, whatever it is, these are your multiple of decisions. Even if they just have 5 or 6 decisions that they can make within that space, there's a shit ton of creativity that can occur. A shit ton of creativity. Oh, I want to give it to my winger. I'm going to fake it, fake like I'm going to go to my center back and have the defender bite, and I go to my winger. Like, all kinds of things like this can exist within an established structure versus letting them do whatever the hell they want. I think people think that if you just let players do whatever they want, out pops a Messi or out pops a Ronaldinho or out pops one of these things. And the fact of the matter is that those players back then and now, they get their creativity by playing every single day outside of their team environment, playing pickup soccer, playing on their own in a park against the wall. That is how you churn out Ronaldinho's and Messi's. Barcelona did not make Messi creative, okay? Barcelona did not make Iniesta or Xavi creative. On the contrary, they gave them an awesome structure from where to be able to express themselves and maximize the creativity that they already have within them. Now, there's the other extreme. The other extreme, which is, I think, also what people think in their heads, is, oh, well, this kid has some of that creativity potential, but you're telling him to pass the ball and not dribble. People think like this, okay? I don't think that's really happening all that much. I think if you have a talented player on the field, most coaches, most coaches out there know it, and they're going to let their playmaker playmake and go off and dribble and do what it is that they do best. I don't see, nor do I believe, that if there's a talented player on the team that the coaches say, no, you cannot express your talent. You must make a simple pass. I don't believe that, Ben.
Well, let me chime in, Greg, because I literally just witnessed this two or three days ago. I was at a tournament. I just finished my games and I'm watching another team play, right? And their coach is instructing. They were trying to play out of the backfield, out of the back, right? But again, they're really little kids, you know? Mm-hmm. But their team has one super phenom up top, little Mexican kid. And this was correct. He can dribble anybody, right? But Gary, it's so funny. Every time he got the ball and he would try and take somebody on, all the parents, all the coaches would be screaming at this one, pass the ball, because he would take one or two guys on and have an opportunity to score, but he'll lose the ball, right? And the parents got pissed. The coach is getting pissed, screaming at him, saying like, hey, get rid of the ball or share the ball. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I do see it a lot.
That's a good observation. I've seen that for decades as well. I think part of the equation that is existing there is something else extracurricular outside of soccer. And that is, oh, that's the ball hog on the team. And we want to not let the ball hog and the special player shine too much or outshine everybody else, you know? And so there's an ingredient of jealousy, of envy that exists from the parent perspective, force a lot of parents into that posture of like, get rid of it, you know, don't score, you know, give it to Johnny or Max instead, you know? So there's a big element to, I'm being frank, there's an element to that there. I don't think that the parents screaming on the sideline are thinking to themselves, oh, it'll be better for this kid's development or it'll be, you know what I mean? Like if, you know what I'm saying? Like they're not thinking like that. And if the coach is also saying it, look, who's the boss on the team? In here in youth club soccer in the United States, if you are not a powerful coach, and that's another topic for another day, the bosses are the parents. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the coach is also probably feeling the pressure and he's probably being texted every day or emailed every day or talked to every day or whatever. Hey, man, Jose, dude, it's not right what he's doing. It's not right that every time he gets the ball, he gets to do whatever he wants with the ball. And my son, you know, has to pass it or is sharing, you know, and Jose doesn't share. So guess what? The coach is under a massive amount of pressure to also yell, Jose, get rid of the ball or pass the ball. Max is open or something like that. So I'm not saying that is the truth, but I'm saying that is a big piece of the puzzle, in my opinion, of what's going on.
Right. You're exactly right, Gary. It's not the parents yelling at him because they think it's going to help him develop better, right? It's because mm-hmm. one, they want their son to get the ball and two, they want to win the game, right? So, but it's just so funny how parents think they know everything. I see it on the sidelines all the time. Like when a team is trying to build out of the back, like, God, don't play it across the middle or launch it out, you know, like. It's just so funny to me. And I think there needs to be more education. Coaches, if you're listening to this and you are trying to implement this philosophy, you have to educate your parents. Otherwise, you're going to get nowhere, you know, no matter how hard you're working. Because at the end of the day, right, you can have so much influence on your players as a coach. But after practice, who do they get in the car with, right? Their parents. And their parents are going to sway what they want them to do. Or if they think that they're not doing something right. Hey, Johnny, like, don't listen to your coach. No, you shouldn't make that pass to your center back across the goal. Like, you're going to get scored on. And so in the game, the kid's like, oh, well, Coach Benny said this thing, but my parent is saying this thing. So who do I listen to? And so that's a dilemma that a lot of coaches are facing for sure. In my first couple of years as a coach, it was something that I dealt with a lot because I didn't do a good job of educating the parents. Now, like day one, I'm letting the parents know, hey, this is how we're going to play. And listen, if this is something that you're not comfortable with or you think is not going to be in the best interest of your son or daughter, then move on and you can find another team. But so far to this point, Guy, I've never had any parents say like, oh no, what you're doing, Benny, is wrong or I don't want to be a part of it. So I think parents are coming a long way and they are willing to listen, you know, some of them.
No, the vast majority, I think, are very receptive. And it depends also on your capability to communicate your ideas to them. And whether they respect it or they don't respect it. I think right now you're a very young coach. You're about to turn 30. But at this point, I think you have a lot of credibility versus if you were trying to teach or educate the parents when you first started at age 22 or whenever. I don't know. When did you start? 22, 23, something like that?
Yeah, I was about 22 years old. 21, maybe.
at 21, maybe the parents just aren't that receptive. They're like, what does this little kid know about soccer? It's his first year coaching. You know what I mean? So I empathize with the coaches out there a lot as well, because it's not easy. And even the most seasoned coaches, the most powerful coaches that are very persuasive and charismatic, you always have I'll say it this way. The issues never end. The issues never end. Okay. Because at the end of the day, it's the son or the daughter of the parent, and mom and dad knows best for their kid in their eyes, obviously. And you're not going to be able to satisfy everybody. So if you're not satisfying somebody, that somebody doesn't care about the education that you gave them.
100%. You and Brian Gary were pioneers in bringing possession soccer to the U.S. So I'm curious, when you guys first started, I know that Brian had a lot of success with that Rage team, but I'm curious if in that first couple of months, if like the club directors or the parents were like freaking out, or because again, like nobody has seen this style of play or this type of possession soccer executed to this level in the state. So was there any concern from the club or parents in that first team, or even on the girls team that Brian's at?
Yeah. And for the audience here, because they may not know, because a lot of folks came to know us through the U11s, right, that were in the Barcelona jerseys and all that stuff. But Brian had coached previous to that. And most of his best work, in my opinion, was previous to that team, because his previous team or teams were not stacked as much. And yet he still was able to, you know, ultimately get a national championship and all D1 scholarships, all this sort of thing. Anyway, I came into it after those first handful of months had occurred, Benny. You know, I just randomly showed up to one of his games. And like I said before, I'm like, whoa, holy shit, this is crazy. You know, and that kind of hooked me in. But all that stuff that happened the first handful of months, however long it was, I was not present for. So I can't speak to that. What I can speak to is that, yeah, there was always turmoil throughout the year and every new season. And a big part of the turmoil was playing time, because Brian really, and you'll have to speak to him, okay? I'm just giving my opinion of what I saw. Brian is very merit-based, okay? He runs a meritocracy. So obviously with development in mind, so he was giving a lot of opportunities to the players who did not play as much, but compared to other teams and other clubs, it was more imbalanced. So there were games when players did not play a single minute, you know, and there were games when a player may have played 15 minutes only, or there were seasons, entire seasons, where a player may have only played an average of 15, 20 minutes a game, you know, and against weaker opposition or something like that. Sure, those players were given starts and a full 90 and things of that nature, but it was tough on those players who rarely played. And imagine the parents, okay? So that was always an issue. And as a result of that, there was turnover season to season, which is, I think, a natural part of the development process as well. So the four or five guys who were on the lower end of the roster, it's best for them to maybe get 90 minutes elsewhere. Maybe. Because sometimes it's good to be on a team like that with a coach like that, even though you're not the starter sometimes. Okay. But yeah, the lower end of the roster would cycle out and four or five new great recruits would come in and the team would be upgraded in that respect. And guess what? The players who stayed on the roster got an even better environment the following season, because the team as a whole leveled up, competition during training leveled up, competition for playing time on the weekend leveled up. But yeah, it was a challenge with the parents, no question.
And if I remember correctly, Gary, I think you and Brian were trying to, I don't know if it was become the directors of Orange Soccer, the president, or what was it?
Right.
I remember you told me like at the time it felt like such a big deal, right? When you guys got denied, you're like, fuck. So I'm thinking like, is the club like scared of this new possession-based methodology that, you know what I'm saying?
I didn't even answer your question. Okay, it was Eddie.
You went on a little rant about playing time, which I'll have some more comments to make on, because I myself was one of those players on the bench. But yeah, for me, I never like felt like, what the fuck, Brian's a dick. Why am I not playing? It was valid why I wasn't playing. And it woke my ass up like, all right, I need to work harder. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Yeah, I think I went on the playing time tangent because that is what caused friction. And ultimately, that friction trickles up to the club level. And Brian was a very, very young coach, I think in his 20s also. And he didn't run the club, you know, some parents were running the club. And so, yeah, the club hears about it. The president hears about it. The DOC, I don't even remember if there was a DOC. I think there was, but it's kind of like a joke of a position. Would hear about it. And then you have conversations like, oh, Brian, you know, Gary, what's going on over here? Chaos, you know, all the other teams are fine. You know what I'm saying? There's issues here, but it was hard for them to do too much about it because they were actually on our side in many respects, especially the president of the club, because Brian's team was the flagship team of the club. It was the one that was winning all the time. It was the one that was demonstrating this possession-based football. And I'm talking almost 20 years ago, Benny, I don't even know, that nobody had ever seen, dominating opponents that were way above their punching weight with respect to Brian. And so it was putting Orange Soccer Club on the map in many respects. So it's like, what are you going to do? The guy's doing amazing work here. Yeah, you have a couple disgruntled parents, but okay, well, maybe they need to find themselves another team.
One thing that comes to mind when I hear that is a lot of coaches now they've seen the success that Brian has had and other coaches have had at the highest levels. And so a lot of coaches will say, I'm going to play a possession-based system, right? And again, they pick and choose activities. So really they're not, but there's thousands of coaches that are now applying this methodology. So I feel like in some ways you kind of have to work even harder now as a coach, because again, other coaches have this at their disposal too. How do you counteract that when every other coach out there is understanding the same exact things that you are and the same things that you want?
Yeah. So I think that is, there's levels to everything, right? There's levels. And so there's levels to this as well. Other coaches, let's just take one activity. 4v1 Rondo, the thing that, you know, we always talk about for years here, okay? Because it's bread and butter. Another coach may know about it. That's level one, okay? Another coach may not just know about it, but does it in his training sessions, and he's been doing it in his training sessions for an entire year. Maybe that's level two. Then there's another coach who's been doing it for 5 years. That's level three. Then there's another coach who hasn't just been doing it for 5 years, but has been doing it for 5 years and knows all the intricacies, all the little details, all the subtleties, and is that charismatic coach that we spoke about before, okay, and knows a shit ton about football in general, period, at a very deep level. That's level six or level 10, you know what I mean? And understands not just the intricacies of the activity, but the players at such a deep level that he knows, you know what, I'm going to put these five players in this box and these five players in that box, or I'm going to mix this player into this box to accomplish this result by the end of the week or by the end of the season. There's all kinds of shit going on here, and that's the art of it, okay? So even if all these other coaches know about possession soccer and have kind of a framework of their own to kind of execute or do it, there's levels to it, bro. So great. Come and try and execute your possession-based thing against me. I'm going to wipe the floor with you. You know what I mean? So that, I think that's the answer.
I wish I could have seen you as a coach, Gary.
No, but Ben, I suck. Honestly, it was all Brian. I guess I'm just like, I don't want to say I'm Ferguson, but there's these stories, right? About, there are these stories about the highest level managers. They aren't out there laying out cones. They aren't out there running the activities themselves. You know, they aren't out there correcting players during activities or anything like that. There's a lot of top managers who just sit on the sidelines. Their assistants are running the training sessions. And the top manager is just sitting there observing the players, how everything is going, and then making up his mind, who are my guys? Who's going to be the starting lineup? Who do I see is the best player or the better players? And how are they fit the puzzle pieces? Because when you're directly in the mix of actually laying out the cones and running the training sessions, you lose a lot of that, you know, seeing the forest from the trees, you know, if you're too much in the weeds, you lose out on that vision. So again, I'm not saying I'm Ferguson, right? But I luckily took that sort of role for myself because I thought I was not very good at running training sessions and activities. And I'll just sit back and observe and then just give feedback, you know, as much or as little as Brian wanted.
Interesting. I know you yourself were, I think you told me you were the head coach of a high school team. That was your only like head coach role.
Yeah. At age, I think I was 23. So imagine a child. Okay. I was 23. I was working at Boeing as an engineer. I was simultaneously doing my master's degree in physics. And, you know, I had a friend at the university. I don't know how he knew the athletic director at Pioneer High School, you know, and he's like, oh, Gary, like, oh, he played intramural soccer with me, right? And while I was doing my master's degree, he's like, Gary, hey, varsity job just opened up. I know the AD, do you want it, sort of thing? And the reason he suggested it to me is because, and you've seen me play pickup or whatever, Benny, I'm very vocal on the field. I kind of like command everything. And so that's like a natural coaching sort of quality. And I said, sure, I'll do it. So imagine all of the responsibilities I had. And I was given as my first coaching gig, the varsity job, right, of the boys program. So it did not go well. I'll just put it that way, Ben.
Well, you didn't have the 3-for-3 methodology at your
disposal. For sure. You know what?
It didn't exist.
Well, you know what methodology I had? I had the methodology of my high school soccer coach, which was the assistant American football coach.
You guys are doing like 100-yard sprints and tackling drills.
Yeah, it's the dumbest thing ever, Ben.
That's hilarious. Tell me a little bit, Gary, about kind of yours and Brian's, not so much childhood growing up, but your soccer influences. I'm sure you can remember watching games with Brian or going to games. Like, who are your guys' biggest influences that led to this inspiration of, by the time Brian got to where he's at, he's like, you know what? I want to play this type of way. I want to play possession soccer. Like, do you guys have, or do you have any coaches that you were watching growing up?
It was different back then. If you're talking about my childhood or my teen years, I mean, there was no YouTube. It was just whatever was being broadcast in the moment is what you could watch. And what does come to mind is VHS existed, these big old tapes where you recorded what was on TV. And so we had a huge library of VHS tapes that we recorded ourselves whenever games would come on, World Cup games or whatever the heck it happened to be. And I guess maybe on a daily basis, we would just whip out a tape. Oh, look, Argentina versus Bulgaria. You know, and you had a nice little sticker on the tape and you had the final score and it had the date on it or whatever. We pop that into the player, watch the game, and not just watch the game. We would be pausing and rewinding certain actions or certain moments in the game, not just goals. All kinds of things, building out of the back, you name it. Pause, rewind, slow motion, constantly of everything. And I think just by osmosis, a lot of it got burned into the neurons that way. But insofar as coaching influences or things of that nature, it's not like today. I didn't look up to this coach or that coach. I knew of them. Sven-Goran Eriksson, who just retired. Bilardo from Argentina. You can just go down the list. Beckenbauer from Germany, but you can't study them like you study them now. I didn't have access to all of their press conferences on demand, and it's just different. Insofar as Brian is concerned, he's talked about this many, many times. When he started coaching, he studied Bielsa like crazy, and obviously Pep Guardiola, big influence as well, and his internship at Barcelona, in Barcelona for many, many weeks. I think it was when Luis Enrique was there, if I'm not mistaken, with the B team, big influence, and Argentina, obviously big influence. And so all of that kind of coalesced to what he developed.
I love hearing Brian saying that, you know, anytime a high level coach or Bielsa is at Celtic Fullerton, Brian's going to be in the bushes scouting out, you know?
And those are true stories, because sometimes I would go with him and the session is closed. It's closed to the public. You can't just go in there and observe the training session. So we would either climb fences or finagle our way in there one way or another, or literally there is no clear line of sight, but there's like a chain link fence and freaking bushes in front of the chain link fence. So you kind of like get your ass in, somehow get into the bush, you know, make a little opening there and look through the chain link fence, but you're in the bushes, literally observing and taking notes. So these are all true stories. And one story, I hope you get to talk to him and get this story out of him, because secondhand is not great. I think he went to Copa America when it was in Peru, I think. And again, with Bielsa, I think he actually found, or he gave money to like a security guard to get one of the security guard's yellow jackets or something like that. And he put on a fucking yellow security guard jacket and just walked right on into the stadium and sat down and watched the training session. Look, my memory's not great. It was secondhand. You're going to have to talk to him about how he did that.
I mean, it's badass because it's the love of the game and it's like a culture that doesn't really exist here in the States. I mean, I remember when Jonathan Prieto, he was one of Brian's former players at 3H. He was playing at UCI and myself, Danny and Brian drove down. We didn't have tickets to the game. Like Brian was on the list. Brian's like, hey, like, I know the spot that we can hop over the fence. No problem. I'm all scared, like thinking I'm going to get arrested. But no, it's like those little moments. It's like, dude, if you really care about the game and you love the game, you're going to find a way to learn. You're going to find a way to watch it and be a part of it.
Yeah. And you know, when we last spoke about Pochettino and Argentinian culture, it's part of the Argentinian culture. It's kind of like, oh, okay, there are quote unquote rules. Yeah. But I think I'm going to bend this one because, you know, it's important to watch this training session or this or that, or I drove 5 hours and it was supposed to be open. I was told it was going to be open and I drove 5 hours and now they're telling me it's closed. And the person who told me it was open, oh, magically, they don't know who it is, you know, or something like that. Like, fuck that. I'm hopping the fence over here. It happens all the time. You've seen like, you saw that the Canadians got apparently caught for flying drones.
With the drones, yeah. The
drones that were training sessions. Okay, people here are outraged. Oh my God.
Hey, but the funny thing is they still got smashed. No, 5-0. If you're going to use drones to watch somebody's session, at least fucking come out with a win. Or
it's so funny. It's so funny, man. I mean, I'm not saying that I would do it, you know, but I'm not out there saying, being all self-righteous, like, oh my God, you flew drones over training sessions. You should be excommunicated forever from, like, come on, people, you know, all the
spies. Hey, but this kind of thing happens all over the world, right?
100%.
Yeah. I mean, with the drone, it's pretty obvious, right? But I can imagine back in the day, there's no social media. There's nothing where, let's say somebody from the Canadian national team goes to Peru's session and they're in the bushes. Like, nobody's going to find out. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, again, this happens everywhere. They just so happen that they got caught.
Yeah, correct. And they can't come out and say, oh yeah, well, we saw drones flying over our training sessions too. Then you look like an idiot, you know what I'm saying that, yeah, but it's I'm sure it's happening.
For sure. Hey, credit to them, Jake. They want to win.
I think it's funny, man.
100%. All right, Gary. Well, one last thing I want to bring up, and I think this is important for all the coaches, especially if you just signed up for the course. And one of my favorite lessons from the course, and this is probably a video that I've watched like 50 times, Gary, is it's when Brian it's his first session, I think, with the new Chivas team. I think it was like the U17s. And really, he just sets his expectations for the team and lets them know what he's going to demand from them. And the two big things is, one is 100% focus in the session, right? When you're at the session, you're there, you're not thinking about anything else. You're 100% locked in, focused, right? And the other thing too is 100% effort, meaning you're not going through the motions, you fucking show up and you're working your ass off. So I think it's so important for coaches, especially young coaches working with young kids, to set the expectations from day one. Because if not, then the players feel like they can just walk over you, right? And I think that's something that Brian is so good at, is bringing his players in, making them feel part of a family. Because Brian really does show love to all his players. And, you know, it's tough love, but the fact that he's clear and straight up on day one, it's like, it makes you want to play for him and it makes you want to work hard and succeed for him.
I'm sure you guys have already had a series of discussions with Sasha, with Coach Juan. Eyes up here, please, and focus. The two things that I'm always going to ask for, okay? You've seen it in the younger teams, and now the most important team in the club is you guys, okay? And that's the reason that Sasha and the club, you know, we want to move forward and make a big run now, okay? So you guys know how I feel about you guys and that I've wanted to work with you guys, and now that day is here. So now it's time to really work. Nobody's going to work harder for you than me, okay? Work harder in terms of getting you where you want to go, work harder in terms of studying our opposition, work harder in terms of preparing you guys to succeed, okay, as a team. The two things, right? focus, non-negotiable. When you get here, I see it right now. Your eyes are here. You don't give a shit about anything else. You don't care about your girls. You don't care about school. You don't care about what happened during your day. You care about this and what we have to do tonight to get better. And the second thing is your work ethic. Okay. I've talked about it numerous times with you guys. The thing that excited us most when we formed this team back in late July was that you were all savages, that you all scrapped, that you all wanted to fight, that you all wanted to work. Okay. And slowly along the season, we've seen this. In terms of our work rate, really highs, really well, good days, and then real, real bad days. Okay, and it can't be that way because that's something that you control, and that's something that's non-negotiable with me. When I say non-negotiable, it means you better bring it every single time you are here. If you come half-assed, it's not good enough because it rubs off on Cuevas, on Chavez, on Paul. No, all 16 of us that are on the roster right now come to kill every single session. That way, on the weekend, there's no doubt that you're going to come to kill. Because you prepared that way, okay? It's not just you guys. Even the pros, when you watch Barca, there's some days where you're like, what's wrong with these guys? They're just chilling. Because they didn't come with the right mentality. They're like, oh, we're playing Betis. Today, 50%, I could do it walking. And sometimes they struggle, right? So, hey, if those guys can't flip a switch and say, all right, I want to play right now, they can't do it. How can we? How can they? How can they? It just doesn't happen, boys. So we have to get it here. And I like your guys' focus, and I like your guys' desire, and I'm very, very excited. Okay, I'm sure Sasha's talked about it. It's one game at a time. So what are we worried about now? 1 month of preparation to change. Stay focused here. 1 month to have an identity. Not to just throw 11 of you guys out there and say, hey, let's go, guys, let's battle. No. You're all going to know your roles on this team. What you need to do when we have the ball, what we need to do when we don't have the ball. All of you, individually and as a group. Okay, and the other thing, the last thing I want to add that needs to change is how much we are together, how families stay together and work together and fight together. I don't want to see Paul on one agenda and Cuevas and then Danny. No, we don't have to be best friends, right? But when we're here, we have to work for each other. On the field, we have to work for each other. I used to hear a lot from Juan and Sasha, positive, positive, be positive. Listen, with me, I allow you guys to criticize each other. Okay, but that only happens if the culture that we want to build is built. We're in the rondos, in the fitness, in the básicos, in the scrimmage. If Paul didn't show up with the right intensity, remember, that's non-negotiable. So can any of us tell Paul, hey, Paul, wake up. Or puteadas, or Paul, wake the fuck up. Even though we don't want to use that language here, just something to wake his ass up. And Paul, you take it. You don't snap back, Kappa, shut up. No, that's the negativity that Juan didn't want to see, that Sasha doesn't want to see. Hey, whatever is said on the field and it stays there. Do you guys see sometimes when you're watching the better teams in the world, sometimes when somebody makes a bad play or something, it's puteada mode, right? But it's not puteada mode like, I hate you, you stupid. No, it's, hey, wake up. This is not good enough. Wake up. Okay? So the culture changes tonight and I want to see it and I'm going to make it a change. If you don't want to, send you to the 16s. If you don't want to do the rondos at high speed, I send you over. If you don't want to focus, go. Okay? We don't have the luxury, though, boys. We have us 16, and we're going to battle, and we're going to make a deep run. Okay? Before the season, Sasha, nobody would have bet anything that you guys would have got anywhere. Nobody. Why? Because we had all the excuses in the book. Right? This is a brand new team. All the superstars just left. We could make all the excuses in the book. Bullshit. We have the team, and you've proven it. On any given day, we can do it. But we don't like this, right? We don't like that one day against the Galaxy, you play a good game here, and 1 week later, it's a completely different team. You know how we change that, Rody? We already talked about it. How do we change that? To have consistency. It's every day here. So don't show up. If you're not going to show up with every game, don't show up to training. But then know that you're not going to play at the weekend. Okay, boys? We all excited about this or no?
Yeah.
Hey, I couldn't be more excited. I could not be more excited. I couldn't wait. I could not wait. Ever since I knew this is a possibility, this opportunity is going to happen, I can't sleep at night because I'm thinking of the possibilities of what we're going to do. Okay? And when there's a new coach, you guys know you start from?
Scratch.
From scratch, from zero. Okay, even though I know you guys, that's a difference. Things are going to be different. I may ask something different from you. We may play in a different formation. But whatever it is, if I tell you to go climb the light post and jump, you're going to do it, boys. And if Paul asks you to do it, or Sasha, or Mario, you're going to do it. And I will assure you one thing. There's never a guarantee that we're going to get results. Never. But if we do what we're supposed to do here, the percentages go way up. Okay? Before we start our warm with Mario and I start finishing my setup, what's our team identity? Anybody know? When we have the ball, what do we want to do?
Keep possession.
Okay? So everybody talks about that. Easier said than done. Everybody talks about, oh, we're going to have possession. And then teams don't. So I'm going to be hard on you guys. Okay? Every little detail counts. Every single square foot and inch on this field counts. Hey, every single rondo counts to get our touch better, our technique better. All your technique can get better, okay? If the best players in the world do this for 10, 15 minutes a day, why can't we do it 10, 15 minutes a day to get better? All of you can get better, okay? So you take it dead serious. That is the most important activity you will do to work on your calidad on your foot quality. And as I look around, we have some guys with good quality, and we have some guys that are okay. Take it dead serious. You and Alex, where are you, Alex? You're going to be one of the rondos too, okay? When you see Victor Valdez in the rondos, it's complete quality. It's like a super phenom, like better than any MLS player in terms of foot quality. And that's the goalkeeper, okay? And we need that if we're going to reset with you. Today's plan, so you guys start getting your head prepared. 4v1 rondos, okay? After that, actually, we're going to start with a passing exercise. 4v1 rondos, a possession exercise, going to little gates, and then we're going to play. We're going to get out there and play. We're missing Juan Sanchez. Martinez is hurt.
Mike.
Flores.
Mike.
Diego.
Eric,
we're missing a ton. Okay, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Okay, we need to get it. I need to get everybody's information so we can make sure they're all here. Okay, boys, last thing. Again, look in my eyes. I couldn't be happier, and I'm excited. But for an hour and a half, we have a professional relationship. Before and after, I will do anything. Make sure if you guys are having a bad day, if something's wrong at home, if you guys need anything school-wise, family-wise, support-wise, let me know. Okay, and I'm there for you. But right here, we step on the field, and it's time to scrap and grind. Okay, and you have to understand that. And I'm going to ask the absolute most of you. Off the field, we're going to have a good relationship too. Good?
Yeah.
All right. Mario, ready to go?
I think the players know that it's love. You know what I mean? Because some folks, like if you just read maybe the transcript of like a halftime speech or a pregame speech or what you just described now, if somebody were just to read the transcript, you'd be like, oh my God, like I would never want my son to play for this guy. But it's the exact opposite. If you are the player and you are receiving it from him, the way he communicates it in every respect, not just what he's saying, but his body language and his demeanor, and what happens before and after also, like putting his arm around a particular player, bringing him in, like, you're my brother, I love you, let's figure this thing out. The players know it's genuine, authentic love for them. And what he's communicating is for their benefit. I think that's a hugely underrated skill of a coach. And I don't know if that is something that a coach can acquire. I don't know if it's innate in somebody or not. That's something I haven't quite figured out yet.
I think it can be learned, and everybody is born who they are, right? With personality traits and how you react to certain things. But I think there is an ability to learn, not necessarily to become somebody else that you're not, but to change the way that you speak, change the way that you present your body language. Because again, I personally think it's so important, right? Because imagine, right? Let's say you have a coach who is an absolute master of every single activity. He has a great structure, great philosophy, doing all the right things, but he doesn't have a good personality. He doesn't have good energy, and the players don't click with him. You're not going to see the same results that you would see with a coach that brings energy and shows love and that the players care about. Because at the end of the day, if the players don't want to play for the coach, I mean,
it's totally
not going to have any success.
Totally. I think one ingredient that shouldn't be overlooked, and I don't have proof of this, it's just an intuition, that if you have mastery in something, then whatever charisma you actually have or have the potential to have starts coming out or comes out because you have mastered a particular subject. And so you can flow with that subject in a way that somebody that does not have competence in the subject cannot possibly flow. You know what I mean? Like I know 2 + 2 = 4. So I can give you a speech on 2 + 2 = 4 and make you feel it like, oh yeah, fucking he believes what he's telling you is true, you know? But if I have to go and give a speech and tell to a big audience or an audience or you that 2 + 2 = 9, it's not going to come across the same way. Like, you'll sense like, this guy doesn't really believe what he's telling me.
You can sense a certain level of incompetency, right?
Yeah. So I don't know, man. That's a good chat right there.
All right. Well, last thing, Gary, I'm a coach. I'm thinking about signing up for the 343 membership, but why do I need it? There's videos online of it. I can go and why should I sign up for this course? How is it going to benefit myself, my teams, my parents? You tell me, Gary.
Well, this is how we opened up today. It gives you a quote unquote proven methodology or framework that you can operate out of versus randomly selecting activities or not being sure what is good, what is not so good, and experimenting. Look, experiments are fine at some point. And usually when you're a novice or a newbie at something, you're constantly experimenting because you don't know any better until you finally converge on something. But you don't have to go through that entire trial and error process that may last you years until you discover some truths about the game. And what we've put together here is a shortcut of all that trial and error and experimentation. We have, quote unquote, discovered, right? That it's not a discovery, but through our process, we have converged on truths about the game and what actually works and what is, quote unquote, best to do. So go ahead and cut to the front of the line, get yourself the package, eliminate all this countless hours on YouTube or Instagram or X where God knows who is telling you what. Cut to the chase and get started, man.
Well, again, Gary, allow me to play devil's advocate one last time. Right. Yeah. I don't have Alex Mendez on my team. I don't have Efrain Alvarez on my team. My players, very low level. Is this going to work at lower levels?
It works even more. Well, first off, it works across all the levels and all the ages, but it works even more and even better the lower level you are. Because the lower level you are, think about the competition that you've got. They're low level as well. So if you have any semblance of structure at all, that already catapults you above your competition. And if you have this structure and this framework, forget about it, dude. It's game over for your competition. And insofar as your players having the capacity to execute the activities and the style of play and that stuff, look, it's a learning process. Yes, it's not going to look like Efrain Alvarez or Alex Mendez doing the activity, obviously, okay? But it's not supposed to. You have a 9-year-old kid who's still developing muscles to be able to kick a ball, okay? So you just simply adjust your expectations and they'll get better over time, man.
Interesting. All right, Gary, send me the link. I'm sold.
You're an idiot. Hey, no, seriously, when was the first time you gained access to the whole thing or whatever?
It was when I first started working with you. So this is what, over 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
And again, when I first started using it, Gary, because obviously I had access to all the phases, right? Mm-hmm. Not just phase one, how like a new coach would. Right, and so what would I do? I would go and pick and choose, you know, activities. Oh, this one looks good today. I'm going to get at it with this. But my first year, I didn't use the structure. I didn't consistently train. Hey, these are my 12 core activities. And I didn't have as much success, right? Did my team start to have more of an identity? They did. But I think that they could have gone even further had I stuck into what it is I was supposed to do versus randomly picking and choosing here and there. I'll just say now, right, I'm in a new environment with a new club, low level, but sticking to the philosophy, the curriculum, and massive improvements, Gary, within the last 2-3 months. So it does work. Something for coaches to think about, though, is it doesn't happen overnight. Right. And you can't get frustrated if you could be 3 years into the methodology and your players still haven't mastered the rondos, you know, so it requires patience. You got to keep plugging away at it, but you know, can't give up on it.
Yeah. And that's Benny. It's an interesting point. That's why I structured the program the way it's structured, that you don't get the whole thing. You know, you get, when you sign up, you get phase one, the foundation, the core that then enables you to do the more complex or layered activities later on. So when you first jumped on, it totally makes sense that it didn't really work as well for you because you were skipping around, you know, you were going to year 5 material or year 3 material or God knows when, trying to stitch it all together and not even, you don't even have the core, the framework upon the scaffolding upon which you can build from. I mean, coaches over the years, it happens almost on a weekly or monthly basis. You know, I'll get an email saying, hey, Gary, I started the program, you know, 3 months ago. How do I get phase two or year two, you know, of the material? And I'm thinking to myself, first off, I have to be careful because many coaches are highly experienced coaches coming into the program. Mm-hmm. So they may be capacitated to and understand everything that we just said. They may be capacitated to absorb the higher levels of it all and know when it's appropriate and when it's not appropriate to implement. So there's that. But if you're like a new coach, and a new coach could be somebody who has been coaching for 4 or 5 years. To me, that's a new coach. Okay. But if you're a new coach and you want to skip ahead to year two material, I think it's a huge mistake. Even they're offering, well, I'll pay up front, you know, for next year. I still tell them, look, we can do that. I'll accelerate you to the higher levels part of the program. Cool that you'll let us charge you for the higher levels, but I strongly encourage you not to do that. So I will reject the renewal fees just so that they stick to the program the way it's supposed to work. It's crucial, man. It's like, I don't know, a math analogy. Somebody is learning arithmetic, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and they saw on YouTube or whatever this calculus thing. Oh my God, with calculus, I'd be able to do this, that, and the other thing. And they're like, hey, Gary, teach me, let's go. Let's do some calculus. I'm like, bro, no, you ain't ready for that. Which is what's frustrating sometimes, Benny, again. And I want to be extremely respectful, but so many folks out there are falling for, ooh, look at this Atletico Madrid activity that this coach just posted online, you know, with X's and O's and stuff. I'm going to try that out, you know, with my 14-year-old or something like that. I'm like, no. My God, you're in experimentation phase, and I hope you grow out of the experimentation phase.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.